Now we talk about the African continent and perceptions about the African continent. We're joined on the line from the United Kingdom by Policy Manager and Global Justice Now, Alex Scrivener. Alex, good day to you and welcome to the program.
Good day to you too.
Thank you for joining us. Alex, a common misconception is that Africa is poor and a destitute land. Is Africa rich, but its wealth stolen by Western nations?
Well, I mean, yeah, our reports from last year on this account said precisely that. I mean, I would say the wealth of Africa isn't stolen by Western nations per se. I would say that the wealth of Africa is being stolen by multinational corporations and mostly Western multinational corporations. So, I mean, it is a misconception that sort of dominates all our thinking. You know, I was born in the 1980s and in this country, in the UK, you know, people's view of what Africa as a continent is was shaped by that song from Live Aid in the 1980s, where they say, you know, Africa is a place where nothing ever grows and no rain or rivers flow. And that's a complete lie. It's a lie that people in the West have believed. And it's also a lie that, unfortunately, many people in African countries have come to imbibe. And actually, the reality is that the African continent is incredibly rich. Its resources have been plundered by multinational corporations who take the profits of that wealth outside through various different methods. In fact, our report says that, and in fact, if you take the overall relationship between the African continent and the West of the world, and the West takes more out of Africa, extracts more wealth, than goes in terms of investment or aid.
Yeah, speaking about the wealth that leaves Africa, we understand that $200 billion is leaving the continent. Some of this is direct, like $64 billion in mainly dodgy taxes. What are the other ways in which Africa is being robbed?
I mean, there's loads of ways. I mean, for example, debt is a very major way in which Africa is losing money, leaking capital to the rest of the world. So for example, the Western government talk a lot about aid money. They say, you know, we're here to support African countries to become developed. But actually, when you look at the figures, you know, about $19 billion of aid goes to Africa every year, whereas about the same amount of money, about $18 billion, goes out in debt payments to those same governments. So actually, the entire effect of aid is completely counterbalanced by debt alone. And there are other things, for example, just illegal logging. You know, it's one sector, one way in which African countries are losing money. But through the illegal logging activity, African countries lose about $17 billion. So actually, when you look at the figures on both sides, you'll see that, you know, all the benefits of investment and aid on one side are, if anything, more money leaves the African continent in terms of profit, in terms of loss of tax revenue when multinationals try and avoid tax, through illegal activities like logging, through debt payments, unfair debt payments, the cost of climate change. Climate change is something that African countries have done almost nothing to cause. Climate change is a problem caused by rich countries who have emitted all of this carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases, and yet Africa has to pay the price for it. So it's a fundamentally, structurally unfair system. And yeah, there are all these different ways in which money comes out of the African continent. And that counterbalances everything that's going in.
Yes, you made reference to the debt repayments. Now, one example is that Ghana is losing 30% of its government revenue in debt repayment, as it is the case with many other African countries that are owing the IMF and the World Bank. If Africa is such a rich continent with resources, why are they constantly in need of huge loans to operate?
Well, the reason for this actually is the economic model that actually Western countries and big institutions as well, like the IMF and the World Bank, have mistakenly, imposed upon the continent. So the entire model of growth that has been promoted in the continent has been one of extreme liberalization, extreme dependence on commodities and commodity exports. And, you know, the entire model of these governments' economy and economic planning has been based on the fact that, well, the value of commodities is going to rise and we'll be able to repay all the debt. And now, if commodity prices are falling, that's led to a massive debt crisis across Africa. I mean, look at Mozambique. It's not just Ghana. I mean, Ghana's got the same problem. It's, you know, for 50, 60 years, its economy has been dependent on its commodity exports. Now the commodity exports are crashing in price. The debt which Ghana has taken on has become less, more difficult to pay. Mozambique is the most extreme example, actually. Mozambique has basically defaulted on its debt because of that growth and economic model that's been imposed upon it to a large degree by Western countries and the IMF and the World Bank. Even South Africa, I mean, look at South Africa's situation. You know, you're sitting in Johannesburg. The sovereign debt of South Africa has come off the roof. A lot of that is because of the broken economic model that's been imposed on these countries. It's not about Africa. It's not African countries are destined to be indebted. It's because of the economic model that's been imposed on this continent, in a much more harsh way than has been imposed in Asia. Asian countries are much better at pursuing more balanced economic policies than African countries were, because they were more willing to stand up to the strong muscle tactics of Western countries and IMF and the World Bank.
Now, if African countries are to benefit from foreign investments, they must be allowed to legally regulate the investments and the corporations that often brings it. Why is that not the norm already? Who's in control?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, the big tragedy in Africa is that, South Africa is a partial exception. It's a big emerging economy that is starting to have more and more weight on the world stage, but for the majority of Africa's economies, they're too small by themselves to be able to realistically fight against the direction of travel in terms of policy. If one country does something, then there's a lot of pressure on that country to do otherwise. But I mean, one of the biggest reasons is because of trade agreements. You know, trade agreements are the kind of rules, the rules by which countries do trade are incredibly rigged towards the interests of industrialized nations and established nations. You know, to some extent, emerging economies have managed to win something like that too. I mean, in the case of China, but like for most of sub-Saharan Africa, that's not the case. You know, there are loads of clauses and limits to the policy space that African countries have to be able to develop their economies. That was never the case in terms of the industrialized world or even to some extent in Asia. So I'll give you an example. For example, there are these clauses in trade agreements called investor state dispute settlements, which South Africa actually very heroically pulled out of these agreements a few years ago. But these basically allow foreign companies to sue governments for pursuing public policy that affects their profits. So, for example, when South Africa in 2004 introduced the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, which was a kind of post-apartheid piece of legislation that was about making sure that the wealth from natural resources was more equitably shared in the economy, South Africa was taken to arbitration, and an Italian company managed to force the South African government to roll back and give them an exception and make sure that actually a lot of they didn't have to give 26% of the shares in this particular business to representatives of the majority population of South Africa. So companies are able to bully countries, even countries as relatively successful as South Africa, into following their policies. And that's the problem. Trade agreements, all of these things give multinational companies a lot more power than sovereign governments. And that's the core of the problem.
And who's there to fight back against this? Has the establishment of the African Union helped in any way to give Africa a chance to keep its wealth, or has it had the opposite effect?
Well, I mean, it's multilateral solutions are often a very good way of getting around. I mean, obviously, as I said before, the tragedy in Africa is it's a very fragmented, continent. I mean, Africa is obviously huge, and it's sometimes not helpful to sort of talk about the whole continent in one breath. You know, Johannesburg has about as much in common with Mogadishu as London has with Beirut. But it's good that countries are getting together to discuss kind of common approaches, which increases the weight of the continent and on the world stage. However, I think the real task here is to make sure that the policies that countries are pursuing domestically and pursuing, are changed. And in fact, the power still lies very much in the industrialized world. You know, when countries like the UK still facilitate tax havens, still facilitate multilateral tax avoidance to the extent they do now, I mean, there's a limit to what African countries can do by themselves. So, I mean, that the the real answer here is for systemic change on a world scale, really, and it has to happen. And industrialized countries are going to have to get serious if they really do care about development in on the African continent and elsewhere. So yeah, I mean, there are definitely things that can happen, but I think it has to happen long-term. It has to happen to some extent. The industrialized countries have to give up the immense power that they have on this.
Yes, certainly we need to stop the looting. Alex, thank you very much for your time this afternoon on Radio Islam. We appreciate you taking the time to chat to us.
Thank you very much.
That was Alex Scrivener, Policy Manager and Global Justice Now, who speaks to us live from the United Kingdom, telling us about the challenges that the African continent does face in terms of the wealth, and that it is the multinational companies that have been